I'm Kat.
And I'm Gabe.
And
we're
the Ghouls Next Door. You know, keeping it fun. And today, I don't know what number of the episodes it is, but it's been a bunch. We're old.
Yeah. It's 124, I think. Nice. That's a lot.
It's almost towards 25, which is my favorite number, which is a relevant fact for everyone just now.
Yes.
But we're doing something cool today. We have guests. That's like the thing we do in November. I've decided. I think so. Every year. It's our third one.
Yeah, or it's at least once a month or once a year we have a month that is just guests for a specific reason. So this is November. It's my birthday month. So I bring friends together. We've had the Black Tribbles on. We had a whole slew of guests for a representation in horror series. Mm-hmm. And this month we are talking to fellow horror lovers who have shows or programs similar to ours about a love, appreciation, and critique of the horror genre. So we're kicking off this great show with a friend all the way from California, which is why we are being virtual and we're using this cool high-tech stuff that you saw from Host, our Host episode. So welcome our guest.
Yeah, we have Chardet Sellers, the creator of the Afro Horror Podcast and introspective of the Black experience in the horror genre. She's a writer, has several fun short films, which I watched today and got a big kick out of. Development exec, you know, she's doing the whole thing in California, which is where I was born. So also just biased there. And yeah, just totally talented and awesome. And we're so excited to have her here today.
What an intro. Thank you, ladies. I can't believe you watch those shorts. I always forget that they're live. I always forget that they're up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel that way sometimes.
I'm sorry. They're horrible, but they...
I love them. They're so fun.
They're my, you know, those are my babies, so... But thank you for for being kind about that.
Yeah, it was fun. It's like getting like an intimate glimpse, especially because it's like we don't always remember that we made those or that other people can see them. And then they do. And it's like, that's me.
It's like I'm like, yeah, I did make that movie. That's right. The one I think is up is still Plum. I think Plum is up.
And, oh, I didn't see Plum.
Oh, we didn't see Plum.
Oh, which one did you? Oh, wait. It's a... I know, it's the comedy one.
The comedy ones, yeah.
That one was fun. That won like an AT&T Shorts Award, and they almost didn't give me the award. The judges were like, we almost didn't give you the award because technically all you did was recreate movies. You didn't actually like write an original piece. I was like, oh, come on. Yeah. Like, it was clever. Oh, I love that movie. I can't remember what it's called right now.
I'm forgetting now also just because of anxiety, but it was great. I actually expected it to be like, because we do horror shorts, like with the ghouls.
Yeah.
So I was expecting it to be like horror related because of like, that was the whole like spiel that I was like had in my mind. And then they were funny and I was like, oh my God, this is so great. It was unexpected.
Yeah. My friend Jeff Howard, who's also like my pseudo mentor, he always says like comedy and horror are the same side of the coin. You know, they're twins separated at birth. They both rely on like setup and release. So as much as I love horror and I write horror all the time and the produced film that I have is a horror, I love comedy. I always said I would write a comedy one day. I did write a comedy. It hasn't come out, like it hasn't sold or anything yet, but I love comedy because it's just, it is the flip side of horror. Like you got to laugh and I like being scared. So I didn't even realize none of my horror shorts are on my website. You're right. They're all comedy shorts right now, which is so funny because I don't write comedy. It's great.
Yeah. But it goes Monsters, Inc. It's like laughs and screams are the same thing. They get the same positive reaction.
Yeah, I love a good comedy horror. Like, if you haven't watched it yet, Scare Me premiered on Shudder. And yes. I got to interview the writer-director, and I'm like, this is the perfect blend of just funny and scary. I love it.
Yeah, we're doing, we're going to cover Scare Me on our next episode, the one right after yours. Because we were also, like, super just enthused. Like, we watched it. It was so pleasant to be, like,
so pleasant.
To kind of have some spooky elements, but never really feeling scared until the end, but having all those good laughs in between and the absurdity of it was so much fun.
Yeah, the director and the writer and the actor of it, I interviewed him. I was like, you did all three. That's so crazy. And he was just like, yeah, I want to feel like an extended campfire story. And I was like, it did. It really felt like that. Like I felt like I was hanging out with friends watching, like telling campfire stories. Like they were telling me campfire stories. So love that movie.
Yeah, it's definitely unique. I think it's been a while since we've seen like something like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think blending horror and comedy is such a unique experience. Like anything that Jordan Peele does, like to the fact that we can have like this intense fear where you're like, oh my God. And then a minute later you're like, what?
No, and that's so good you bring that up, because everyone when Get Out came out was like, Jordan Peele's doing horror. I was like, no, he was going to do it great because he knows comedy. He knows about setup and he knows about release, tension and release. So he's, of course, is going to make a great horror director and writer. Like, it's in his DNA. So I'm really glad he went that direction, too, because, like I said, they're both the same side of the coin. They are. You just have served different purposes, yeah, you know, at the end, but they are.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's awesome. Why don't we start by having you tell us a little bit about Afro Horror Pod and kind of like how that came to be and kind of the more in-depth elevator pitch for our listeners.
Yeah, so 2 years ago, I was at the time, I was working with Leah Daniels Butler at her company, 1195, and we got invited to go see the horror noir documentary that Shudder, you know, it's on Shudder now, and it was at the Egyptian Theater here in L.A., and I got to profess my love for Rachel True while I was there. And I was like, this is wonderful. And then I became friends with Ashley Blowell, who, if you don't know, she's like everything horror. She is also the producer and writer of horror noir.
And we became email buddies and we were going back and forth. And at the time, I just started getting into podcasts, like listening to podcasts. I was mostly listening to horror queers. Is that? Trace and Joe Horror Queers, and they were so funny, and their perspective of that community, the gay community, through horror, I was like, that's wonderful. Then I started listening to more and more horror podcasts and learned two things. One, it's a lot of men on horror podcasts, yeah, a lot of white dudes on horror podcasts. Yep. I did find a few ladies. I can't remember their names right now, I'm so sorry, but I did find some ladies I love and I enjoy. I stumbled upon one podcast and they were talking about Halloween Resurrection. Okay, notoriously a terrible film. We all know that. Like, I'm not going to stick up for Halloween Resurrection. But yeah, it's also the blackest film in the Halloween franchise. Like, it's got Busta Rhymes. It's got Tyra Banks. I want to say it's Sean Jackson. No, I can't remember his name. And I feel terrible. But there's another. And they ripped it apart, scene by scene, and it was just the way they ripped it apart, though, they seemingly blamed it on like these hip hop stars and Tyra Banks for being in the movie. And I got really, really mad because I was like, yeah, the movie sucks. I get that. But at the time, when you look at when Halloween Resurrection came out, everyone was including hip hop stars in their movies, especially in horror. We had Usher in The Faculty. Rod Digga was in the remake of 13 Ghosts. Like, everyone was injecting hip hop stars because at the time, you know, we had our 90s hip hop music videos. It was a very in thing, and they were bringing in the fan base. It's like what they do now with influencers, where they're trying to put influencers in. Yeah. But at the time, we actually had talented musicians infiltrating and the horror. And horror genre notoriously is so exclusive for Black people, period, that I really took offense to this podcast of a group of white dudes sitting around ripping Halloween Resurrection because of its Black people in it, that it really made me mad. So I emailed Ashley and I was like, would you ever consider doing horror noir as a podcast? And she very graciously responded back like, I'm so busy. At the time, she just got a teaching job. I think she's still there at a university. Her course is about Black horror. And she was like, I really can't do it, but I really think you should do it, which I will always give her credit for, like, giving me, like, the word. I didn't know anything about podcasting. So I watched YouTube videos. And obviously, I reached out to Joe and Trace and asked them a bunch of questions. And they were so receptive. They immediately were like, why don't you come on the show, first of all? When you do set up your podcast, and then come on the show and promote it, and we'll help you. And they told me about Libsyn. They told me about podcast services and mics and things that I should get. So just off of the power of that and the motivation of like, there's not a podcast right now that just talks about Black horror. There are wonderful people out there who have shows, but they talk about horror just generally, not just specifically about Black people. So that's how Afro Horror became about. And actually, our first episode was about Halloween Resurrection because I was like, we can make fun of our own. I will not tolerate slander from anyone else about Halloween Resurrection. So that's the full story. And now it's a blog on Final Draft. I'm considering turning it into an anthology series to screenwrite it. So it's kind of this thing now, and I'm super proud of it. But it was the sheer motivation of like, nah, you're not going to talk about us like that.
Yeah. Yeah, which is so necessary, right? Like, we totally agree with the kind of environment that is horror, like the horror fandom specifically. For example, like Kat and I were, when we've been doing this for 3 years, and at one point I was like, well, let's go to like a horror convention, because actually I interviewed Ashley Blackwell, because she's actually from Philly. And so we had her on the show and we were talking. She was like, you should go to this one convention, like it's super cool, horror buffs. We couldn't get to that one, so we went to this other one that was closer, and the environment was super uncomfortable.
It's really uncomfortable.
It was big cringe.
It's awful. I went to Screamfest in LA for the first time last year, and I just remember feeling like, I don't belong here. I really don't.
Yeah.
There's no room for me. No one wants me here. And I went by myself because I don't mind going by places by myself. People are like, I would never go out to eat by myself. I do that all the time when the world was open. So
yeah.
I went, I got tickets. I walked around because I was like, this is going to be a place filled with people who love the same things I do. But you really don't feel welcome at those conventions as a Black woman. You're just like, oh, no one wants to talk to me. No one wants to be around me. So this is cool.
Yeah, just lots of white men who idolize like Jason and Freddie and all, like, yeah, just murderous other white men and like their rockabilly girlfriends. And I was just like, if we had a table here to like promote our show, no one would understand it. We would just be labeled like the SJWs. They'd be like, they're, yeah, trying to tell me that this isn't, you know, intersectional feminism. How dare you?
Like, I remember I printed out like 8x5 cards from Staples that had Afro Horror like premiering, and I was passing them out to people and they all looked at me like this, and I was like, oh, I thought we were a welcoming community. I thought we are the freaks, mister. Like, that's us, right? From the craft. We are the freaks. But I feel like a freak within my own freak community. It's very, very strange. So, yeah, that was Scream Fest last year. And they didn't have it this year because of COVID. But I honestly probably won't go back. So,
yeah, we definitely – I don't even remember what it was called. It was a pretty small convention. We were there for like,
New Jersey, which was my first indicator that it was probably not gonna be great.
And I mean, we went and, you know, we enjoyed the cosplays because we love cosplays. But yeah, it was really like this idea, and it's something that I think you totally relate to, of just like trying to find this like peace and this place in the horror community. And the fact that like, that's the front-facing horror fan is that guy, right? But there's so many of us, and we have like this community that's so vast, and it's like just a matter of like finding them on the internet, and then they're like, oh my god, you love horror too, and you understand the complexities of it, and just being like, yeah, this is like catharsis for me, yay!
And that's why this season on Afro Horror, I really made it a point to reach out to more specifically Black women in horror. So we had Zena Dixon on our show a few months ago talking about Ma. Just this month for October, we're talking about The Craft with Jessica. I can't remember her last name, but she's Black Girl's Guide to Horror. Yeah. We just had her on the show.
That's fine.
Yeah. So I was just like, I made it a point because it's just like we are out there. We have to go look for each other, but we are out there. And that's the only way to me to actually feel more comfortable like writing and existing in the horror genre, is if I find people like you, and we can just talk about it. Because at first it was just kind of like me and Chris Courtney Martin just hanging out together, and then just between each other talking about how much it sucks to be a woman, especially in horror. I'm building the tribe. And I always encourage all of our guests, I'm going to encourage the same thing to you, to start writing. I'm just like, if you can podcast, you can write. Like, I said the same thing to Zena. I said the same thing to Jessica. Please write. If you need help to learn how to write, I will ask you to write. But it won't change until our writers change. And right now, there's not enough of us at all.
Yeah, I think, and that's one of the big things I think about the podcast community, is similar to how you were saying, like, you just reached out to Trace and Joe and that they were able to help you, or that even Ashley, with all of the busy life that she has, is able to make time, because we see each other out there. Like, we're like, no, I see Like, understand where you are at. And the only way we're going to make our way up is to help each other and, like, make that platform and make an opportunity for each other to kind of progress. We should have, by the time this airs, because we're recording ahead of time, listeners, should have one or two articles out about horror and kind of media analysis, because that's what we love to do. But we were always full supporters of other creatives. And if you're creating short films or full-fledged horror films, like, we want to share those. We want to project them.
Me too. I'm just like, if you find me on Twitter, I am Sharday Sellers. Like, tweet me your shorts. I'll watch them. Tweet me, like, don't tweet me your scripts, because I cannot read anything right now that I'm writing. But if you've got a short horror film, I want to watch it. Like, I do want to see it. So go ahead and tweet it at me. I just want to support, because it needs to change. I love this genre. I love this genre so much. And I love movies. I'm really, really sad that the movie theaters aren't open, because that's my safe haven, especially when a new horror movie came out. But I love this genre. And because of it, I want it to do better. And it's just not doing as good as it could right now. Like, it is better, but it could be so much better.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think that's, like, a part of why we selected the guests that we did, was, like, you'll see when as the series goes through, it's all very carefully selected people in the horror community, because we were like, no, we're going to uplift these voices so that people can hear them. And because we want to spend time with them, because we're like, you know, you're also out here. You understand the complexities of it. Yeah, that's why, you know, we're super excited to have you. We love Afro Horror Pod. Like Kat was saying, like, listening to it. Some great episodes. I even listened to the short one about I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
It's so short.
Yeah. But I was like, this is great, because, like, it caught me, because I always think of Brandy. Like, I'm always just like, people aren't given enough respect for Brandy and in this film. Piper.
We're like, well, there's not much to say about this one. They live. Great. Moving on. I mean, because honestly, that one was Chris and I, when we were like, do we talk about I Still Know What You Did Last Summer or not? Because it's not a lot, right? Like, it's Brandy as the stock best friend, yes, and then Mekhi Phifer as the really weird horny best, like, boyfriend. But we really had to give Brandy Norwood her flowers, because what people don't remember for some reason is that in the 90s, like I said, when we're talking about Halloween Resurrection, that was a big deal to have Brandy in a film like that. Like, she had the TV show, she had the albums, and she was doing this franchise, and she lived. Like, she didn't die. Like, it was a big deal. So it's a short episode, because we're really like, she's her sock black best friend. She's like, go girl, you can do this karaoke. She's skinny ass, and she happens to win. And that's literally all the layers she's given. So
yeah. We're always on the outlook of, like, the, are you okay? Best friend, like, okay? Rachel Chu talks about, are you okay? And we're just like, always call it, we're like, oh, there we go. Best friend is here.
Yeah. But it was like, we just wanted to make sure, like, people understood the awesomeness that was Brandy at the time in the late 90s, early 2000s, with these albums, these hit singles after hit single after hit single, hit TV show, and then a movie, standing next to Jennifer Love Hewitt. Like, we had to do it, but it was the shortest, because I have nothing to talk about, honestly.
Yeah, but I think it's like, I love that that's the approach that you took, because there's so many ways that, like, people can kind of go at it. And it was exciting to just, like, let's step out and, like, just be in this time and think about, like, what this meant for people.
Yeah.
Like, what this meant for, like, young girls.
I was like, yeah. And I was like 10 or 11. And I actually got to see, I didn't see it in theaters, right? Cause I was young. So I was like, my mom's not taking me to see that. But when I actually saw it, I just remember thinking, oh my God, Brandy's hair looks like mine. Like, it was a big deal. She's wearing box braids. Are you kidding? And it was, and now you think as an adult and you're like, thank God she's wearing box braids. Cause she was going to the Bahamas. What if they, like, would have put her in, like, a weave or like, no, that's vacation hair. And that is down to the authenticity. Oh my God. Whatever the word is, that goes down to, like, a black experience. We as black women tend to wear our hair in braids on vacation mode, so we don't have to deal with sweating out our weaves or sweating out our natural hair. And it goes, like, it's a whole thing when you look at it as an adult, but as a kid, it was just like, this is the pop star that I love, and she's wearing hair that I wear. So I don't feel insecure when I, like, I grew up in a very white town in Michigan. So wearing braids wasn't, like, at that point, a big deal. Like, braids are in now. Everyone's wearing braids. Kardashians, everyone. But at that point, no. When I was 10, no. Everyone was not wearing braids. So, yeah, it was just nice to see someone that looked like you on screen. I don't understand why these executives don't understand that is so nice to feel when you're watching anything on screen, to see someone that looks like you, sounds like you, could be you. Like, it's just really, really nice.
I would argue it's because they've never had to experience not
exactly having like the power it must be to be a white man, just like everything's for you, like TV, movie, clothes, like bank accounts, house applications, like everything's meant to make your life easier. It just, that's why they have so much power. And I mean power in the sense of like confidence. Like, they're so confident because they've never had that moment of insecurity.
It's like, how could, I can't imagine.
Imagine what it's like. So we gave our love to, we never did I Know What You Did Last Summer, because there's no black people to honor in that movie, which is the only stipulation for our film. And it can't just be like a one-lined black person for our podcast. I mean, it has to be like, it has to be a supporting character or a lead. Like, you can't just have a couple of lines and toss it out there. So there's a lot of movies that I love that we won't be covering because there's no black people in it. So
and that's the question too, right? It's like, people aren't even noticing that. Like, they hear horror and they have a very specific view of what horror is and what the horror go-tos are, which is like Kat and I catch a lot of flack all the time, because like, when people ask us what our favorite horror movies are or anything like that, like, we're like, you're not gonna like our answer because it's not gonna be what you want to hear. Like, what we value is not what you value.
Exactly. Someone asked me that too, and I always say it's The Descent. Is it because it's all women? No, because it's probably the best horror film I've seen in the last 20 years, honestly.
It's very satisfying.
It's a great story. It's a great story. It happens to star five women, but it's a great story at the end of the day.
And absolutely terrifying.
Terrifying.
Claustrophobia, and then also monsters, and it's like
and also like the breakdown of a friendship and betrayal. I'm like, this is everything I want in a horror film. So and one of the best final girls ever, like the best arc of a final girl on screen.
She's taking names
kicking ass. So everyone doesn't like the answer. And then we and Chris Courtney Martin were talking about this, because Chris came back to guest on the Eve's Bayou episode, and she, you know, she's working on pitching her horror charcuterie, which I can't tell you about it, but it's a really freaking awesome script, and I don't understand why it's not sold yet. But she was like, you know, when I mention Eve's Bayou in rooms of people who are supposed to be horror fans and they tell me that they've never seen it, like, that's where the disconnect happens. Like, you've never seen Eve's Bayou, but you expect me to, like, kiss your ass because Jason? Like, Jason and Freddy and them? I'm like, no, we're not doing that. So, two separate sides to this, what do you call it, fandom. Like, there's two separate sides to the fandom. It's like, women and people of color over here, and then just everyone else, because they didn't grow up having to watch like Tales from the Hood and all the things that I grew up watching. So,
And like, understanding like
separate conventions, we should just get like a whole subsect of the horror genre and just
Afro
like
horror make convention.
As long as they're like, there's Blurred Con, right? Like, why not have like a blurred horror, or like just like a convention of horror about BIPOC and women being like, these are the values. This is what's cool.
Conventions are hard. I remember what that one girl got in trouble because she took all that money and then like never had the convention. Yeah. So
I think that was like what, Tumblr or whatever.
Yeah,
Tumblr convention. Yeah, but I mean, I would love to see that fire festival. So we have our good friends over at the Michaud Mission. Have you heard of that podcast?
No, I haven't.
So the Michaud Mission is Len Webb and Vince Williams, who are, I think their tagline is two black men, one podcast, every black film ever made.
Oh, and cool.
So, so it's them like kind of diving into to black film of all kinds, kind of stemming off of Oscar Michaud and all the work that he did. And a big question that comes up often with him, and what I think it is kind of adds to what you were saying is like what constitutes a black film. And so part of them will like, they'll cover a film that has like more than one black person in it or has like lines. But then there's always also that question of like, who's behind the scenes, right? Like who's holding that camera? Cause it's like, you can have Candyman, which is like an incredibly black film, but then it's Clyde Barker, not.
Right. So it's like,
And then it's like white crew. And
that's exactly the reason why Afro horror isn't specifically just about black horror. Cause that's a whole different topic. Like that would include Get Out, Candyman, things like that. It's more so about giving flowers to black actors who had to suffer through some of these films that are white horror, right? But they're there and they're trying to make their identity as a black person in that film. So we kind of, we put the caveats that way because had it just been strictly black horror films, we would have ran out of shows 2 seasons ago.
It's unfortunate. Unfortunate. When you start making like, you know, more things to check off, it's just like,
we would have ran out of shows, honestly. So
that's why there's more that need to be made.
That's exactly why there's more that needs to be made. I mean, our Ma episode was really interesting because, right, it's like starring a black woman about a black woman's life, but it's not black horror by any means.
Ma was disappointed.
You guys, for all those watching, please go listen to our mom episode. Zena and I probably had way too much fun on that episode. We love Octavia Spencer. We always give our flowers to the actor, so it's never a rip on Octavia because we know how movies work, but we definitely rip Blumhouse.
We really not love Jason Blumhouse, and honestly kind of diss him whenever we get the chance. We covered Ma on a part of our representation in horror series. Mm-hmm. So we invited like a person from that community to talk about horror and how it influenced them and like how they saw themselves on screen. And so our guest, Ariel Taylor, who's like an instructor and isn't a big horror fan, like she watched that with us. And we are also just like, who did your hair? Who allowed this? Like, you know, a black woman was not on set.
That mushroom bowl cut. We went in and Jason and I and Blumhouse and I have this love-hate relationship. Obviously, it's every horror person's dream to like have that Blumhouse tag because it's like solidifies that, oh, cool, I made it. But if I'm going to be frank, and I can, because like, what is he going to do? Not hire me? He's not hiring me right now anyway. He's got a bad rap when it comes to hiring women for features. Like what his TV show, like Into the Dark, great. There's tons of female writers on that show. But and female directors, I mean, too. When it comes to hiring women for features for Blumhouse, he's not great. The whole company is not great at it. Although, they got Karen Kuzma coming up. But that's Karen Kuzma. She's not even, like, she's in a category of her own. Like, I don't even count
her.
We've
already seen what she could do. And I mean, his notorious response of like, I would love to hire more women, but they don't want to do horror. I was like, you need to check your inbox.
Saying? They don't have the experience because at Blumhouse, if you guys don't know, the rule is to direct at Blumhouse, you have to have directed something prior, a feature, right? And that's just such BS because all of the women directors I know who actually have directed features who would actually love to work for Blumhouse, I don't think they've ever been asked. So I don't understand what these gatekeeping blocks are being put in front. But that's why to me Blumhouse has a lot of work to do just with their, and they, you know, Get Out was a big catch for them. Huge. Mm-hmm. But not because they did it, because Jordan did it. So
yeah.
It
was like, oh, annoying. Yes. Yeah. Oh my God.
They'll never hire me now that I've ripped them to pieces.
Yeah, I think we've definitely put out like if you ever listen to anything
monetized on YouTube, so it's fine. We made our choice to just say stuff and be honest. And if we don't get the job, because
when I met him, I would say, Jason, love everything your company is doing, but you purposely are obtuse on diversity, and I don't understand why.
Sorry. And I feel like we should be, you know, kind of confronting more people that way, especially now, like 2020, it's like all bets are off. Like, we're not playing anymore. Like, we're tired of people putting up graphics and then calling it a day. Like, that is not enough.
Yeah, and I don't know the numbers, but I know I read a statistic somewhere that not only are women the largest consumers for horror, but like Black women and Latina women in particular are the largest mm-hmm. consumer for horror. So I'm just like, I don't understand how we can support you, give you the money, we can invest into you, but you won't invest into us. So that's just how I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd say it to his face, I would.
I hope that one day you get the opportunity.
You know what? I was watching him on he was doing an interview with Sundance months ago, you know, on Zoom, and they were asking questions, and the moderator, I don't know, she saw my questions, but I purposely were like, why don't you hire women? And like in the chat box. And I think she's like, next question.
That's fine. That is PC. Yeah, the debate.
Sorry.
No, that's real. Like, we knew, that's why we were so excited to get you on here, because we're like, oh, someone who understands, who gets it. Like, I'm still waiting for that representation. Like, I'm still like, yeah. I would love to see myself on screen. I'd love to see what that looks like.
I mean, because when you think about it, Candyman is really the only, it's a tricky slide too, right? Like, as I'm saying, we need more Black representation on screen. There's also a really fine line with that, because somehow Candyman has pulled it off. Like, he is a serial, like, he is a murderer. He is a killer, and he's Black. And it doesn't reflect upon, like, Black men, and they did it in a way where it's just, like, no one's offended by Candyman, right? Like, mm-hmm. he's cool. Like, oh, we've made that. But it is a tricky line, because as much as I do want a Black female killer, because I think there's no one in the world angrier, or not angrier, but who should be angry.
Rightfully
yeah. angry than Black women. And if anyone was going to chop and dice up someone, it would be us. It is a fine line, because it's also like, we don't want to feed into those stereotypes of people being afraid of Black people because they're angry and they're violent. So I get why there is like a little hesitation with doing it, but also like, I do want a really good lead Black final girl. Brandy's not enough. Lupita, still not final girl-ish to me, for us. So I really want I want my Sydney Prescott Black. Where is my Black Sidney Prescott? Where is my Black Laurie Strode? You know what I mean? Like, I want a franchise. Mm-hmm. And I always think back to Alien versus Predator with Sanaa Lathan. And I'm like, why wasn't that a franchise? She was it. She could have done two more movies. I would have showed up for all of them.
Yeah.
I thought she was wonderful. But
yeah, I agree. Because then what we get is something like Ma. Right?
Yeah. And you're like, and I'm like, oh, that's not what I want. I don't want a mammy caricature of this woman. Like, that backstory of Ma is terrible, but you know, listen to the podcast, you understand why. Because I also, another problem with horror, that's why, because men write it, I don't like sexual assault tropes. I don't like that our women mm-hmm. on screen have to be sexually abused to have stakes or have real character development. And men love using a good old I don't want to say the R word, but a good old sexual assault trope to get mm-hmm. us to be broken. And like Last House on the Left, when I watched, I'm never gonna watch that movie again, because I don't care how scary it is. There's nothing more frightening than that scene. That, you guys know what I'm talking about if you've seen that movie. Mm-hmm. I can't watch that stuff because it's a possibility for me. So I don't understand why men keep using that device to make women stronger. And quickly to tell this story, I produced on a movie, I won't say the name because it's coming out and I'm not trying to put anything on it. I produced a movie, and before we even shot the movie, I had discussions with the director, because he had 3 sexual assault scenes in his script, and he kept saying, oh, it's because the character, she's getting stronger and she's growing. And I'm like, she can grow without that. And long story short, by the end, she still had 2. I was able to knock 1 down, but I lost the fight of getting rid of all of them. And it's just such a disgusting device for people to use. And people will throw examples at me, like, I can't remember the name of the movie, but there is one that came out a few years ago about a woman who is getting her revenge. I think it's called Revenge, on people who sexually assaulted her. Yeah. And they're like, well, that was good. And I was like, that's not the point. I don't care. Like,
the revenge trope is our least favorite trope. It is the one that we are constantly aggravated by, and the fact that it still exists in 2020. Like how we felt about Ma is similar to how we felt about The Invisible Man. Mm-hmm. And like, we had high hopes for it, and then it totally took, like, it's very clearly written by a man who's never experienced this trauma. And it becomes very obvious as you're watching it that that's what's happening. And it totally takes you out of the moment. And it's a throwaway trope. It's the same kind of trope that we use when we try to label someone as having a mental illness, therefore of course they murdered people. Like, that's even applicable. Yeah. And so it's lazy writing, and it's completely disrespectful to any woman.
Lazy writing, and it is disrespectful. And me and that person who wrote and directed that script, you know, we butt heads the entire time because I just don't see the point. Like, in the story, and again, I'm not going to name it because I want it to do well. I want it to come out because a lot of hardworking people behind the scenes worked really good on that. But it's just like, if you can't think of anything else for women to go through for them to grow besides sexual assault, you're not a good writer, and you can't convince me otherwise. Like, I write all day without people having to go through sexual assault, and they still grow, and they're still broken, and there's still stakes, and it's still interesting. So it's just like annoyed. And that's why I'm encouraging more women to write, because I can't watch any more male centric horror films, especially because the only good thing about our genre, our saving grace, is that women do lead in horror films. We usually 90% of the time have a female lead in a horror film, but there's a caveat to that. It's because people want to see women scream. They want to see them tortured. They want to see them brought down and broken. And that's disgusting, right?
Like,
disgusting. Like, the obsession that people have with Michael Myers, and I'm included in this. I am not excluded from this because I grew up with it. And I'm rooting for Michael to kill Lori. I'm not rooting for Lori. I'm like, get her, Michael. Every time I'm like, come on, Michael. So there's something about there is a connection between violence against women and this weird, like, thing society has about seeing it, and the horror genre. Yes, more women are getting work, but we're seeing a lot more battered women on screen. And that is gross that we have such an obsession as a society with seeing that on screen, AKA torture porn. Right.
Yeah.
And, like, I will say, like, from personal experience, I've had that argument where, like, someone wrote sexual assault into a script thing for a manga. And I was like, why? Why? And he's like, for depth. And I was like, well, I'm going to send you 5 articles explaining why that's lazy writing. But what's wild is that, like, that the convincing of the fact that that's not a device for them has to be argued so heavy, and that still it isn't enough. It's just like, why do they think it's for them? It's like the same
And I'm a fair person. It's not like I'm just, oh, only women. Because when I watch Lovecraft Country's episode, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, where I can't remember the name, but she's like shedding. If you ever seen Lovecraft Country, there is an episode where she is able to like turn into a white woman and then shed skin. And at the end of that episode, there is a sexual assault to her manager, and even though he's a terrible person, at the end of the episode was like, they didn't need that. It was rough. It was unnecessary. There's no point to have that. And I actually haven't caught up on the show since, because that really turned me off. So I'm across the board fair about it. It's not just only to women. When it happens to men too, even like in shows like 13 Reasons Why, I'm like, did you need this? Did you need this? Or is this like torture porn? Yeah. Are you getting, like, the answer is no. It's never really necessary to depict this. Like, it's just not. There are other ways. There's subtle ways you could do it if it's so important. But no one's ever made a case to me that sexual assault was so important outside of like a biopic. Like, no one's ever made a case to me like this character needed to go through this sexual assault. So I'm against it in all forms. Like, it is lazy writing. It's there for a shock value. And I'm like, if you need that, then you don't know how to write. I'm sorry. You just don't.
Yeah. People are more complex than that. And I agree. We're big fans of Lovecraft Country. And there has been a few moments where, like, I mean, I love a lot of it. I love the book and I love the show. I think Misha Green's doing a great job. Same. But there have been 3 different instances of things that have happened that come kind of at the tail end of a film of the show, where I'm just like, that was unnecessary and actually very harmful to the people that are like shown in that scene. Like, you are being incredibly harmful to like these specific characters. And at some point it's like, you can't even use it anymore as like a tool for education. Like, you're just still like, you're doing the same harmful tropes. You're bending the same narratives, and people are not always smart enough to understand the complexity of it. And so they just see it for face value and they're like, okay, it's cool to harm people when you're angry.
Right. Instead of being like, the show has to end on a bang. So we come back to the next episode. We get it. But, and again, this is not a slight towards Misha or the people at Lovecraft. It's a brilliant show, But with everything, like, I'm going to be fair. There's going to be moments mm-hmm. where I'm just like, just because the show is brilliant, I love the creators and I love everything. There are moments, like you said, that let's be honest with ourselves. You didn't need that. Like, you just yeah. didn't yeah. need that. Like, a heel really to Cardi B's bloody shoes. Like, come on. Like, it's too far. It's just not even too far, because I don't believe art can go too far. It's more so just like, it's cheap. It's a cheap mm-hmm. way to keep people to make shock and awe value. It's cheap. It's just cheap. And I feel like you're better than that. You're way better than that. So yeah. I know the headline would be, she hates Lovecraft Country and Misha Green. That's not true. I love that show. And I will always back that show. But I'm just saying, like, across the board, you guys, this genre, for some reason, relies really heavily on sexual assault. And it doesn't have to. It really doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There's so much that we hope to see in the future of horror. And I think having shows like yours, and the others that are looking and asking for more and like helping each mm-hmm. other kind of do that. It's like, if we get more people who are writing and directing and creating this media, like, we have heard those same tired voices over and over again. Like, it's good. Like, you guys can retire now. Pass the torch over to some new people, because we need some new stories. These are old, they're tired, we're like exhausted yes. from it all. And I think when we see the instances where we have passed the torch, they have been phenomenal. And so it's like, yep. okay, understand that. Like, they're speaking on the Black serial killer, there is a film, and maybe with this episode, people will remember, will help me. I saw a trailer for a short film, or not a short film, a film, but I think it's like indie, where it's a woman who can see color or see sound. So, you know, like, mm-hmm. what, I forget what that's called, synesthesia or something. Yeah. And she can see sound, but is at some point, I think she is murdering people to create like her big, like, color magnum opus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like, she's making this art thing, like, with music and art or something. Like, it was right. again a big trailer. It
sounds interesting.
But it's a Black woman who's like killing these people to get the results that she needs. And I was like, if anyone can remember what the name of this is.
If you don't remember, just let me know. I mean, but to your point, like, not just injecting, let me go back. Injecting Black people into horror also raises the stakes across the board. So mm-hmm. we were having a conversation, Joe and Trace and I and some people online, about I Know What You Did Last Summer. And I was telling, you know, I was having a dialogue of like, just imagine that scene in I Know What You Did Last Summer where they do hit the guy and everyone's out of the car. And in the movie that happens, it's more like, oh, we're drunk and we're going to be in trouble because we're drunk. I was like, imagine if they were Black. Imagine if just mm-hmm. one of them were. Imagine if the guy was Freddie Prinze's character was Black. Then it's a yeah. whole new level of stakes. It's like, wait a second. I'm driving this car. I hit someone. I'm Black. Police are coming. It changes the entire, and it brings more gravitas to it. Cause you know, I Know What You Did Last Summer is pushing it a little bit. I'm like, yeah, you guys, you weren't drinking though. Barry was sober and you accidentally hit someone, like, and you're white and this is New England. I'm sure they would have listened to you. Like, I don't mm-hmm. think you need to, you guys overreacted for sure. But, but if you, as soon as you inject one Black character, it changes the stakes of level. So that's why I'm always outside of diversity, because it's right. It's also like adding more to the horror. Like, you guys, mm-hmm. you know, that's what we want as fans. We want more stakes and we want more tension. Well, as soon as you add someone who is Black, you get that automatically, because there's so much that comes with just being Black, and racism is the number one. Like, the tension of Get Out, you know, there's never, like, it's not a slasher film, obviously, but the tension of Get Out is that palpable, like, is this racist? Is this not racist? Yeah. Is he gonna be okay or not? Like, that's the tension of Get Out, and it's so relatable to me and everyone who looks like me. So, that's why you should be injecting Black people in your scripts.
Yeah, it makes me think of that film at Issa Rae, Lovebirds, where they like mm-hmm. are involved yeah. in the hit and run, or like the vehicle manslaughter, and like her whole thing is like, we cannot go to the police.
Oh, not Lovebirds. That's with that's Queen and Slim.
No, no, right? No.
That was Lovebirds too.
Oh, yeah, they like
Birds. You're right. The comedy. I kept thinking of the Photograph. Issa's in so many movies. I keep getting them mixed up. Good job, Issa. Yeah, Lovebirds. You're right. We're like, no, the cops aren't an option. Yeah, but also Queen yeah. and Slim. You know, which like that makes it believable. Like, yeah, I get why you guys totally ran. I get
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, appropriately.
That convinced me. Right. I get that. So.
Yeah. And that's, like, honest storytelling, right? Like, the same thing with the reason why revenge tropes don't work is that, like, in reality, if you kill your abuser, you go to jail. You are incarcerated. And then your life is over. And so it's, like, you are not, like, the fake ending that you've given your viewers of them feeling triumphant is incorrect. That's not what you feel. Incorrect. You feel just as bad. That's not how you live. Which is why our favorite horror movie, or one of them, is It Follows. Because it's not about revenge. It's about, like, something awful happened to me and now I got to live with it.
Just handling your stuff, man. It's the entire film.
It Follows. She wasn't abused. She had consensual sex with this man, and he lied to her about this thing, which happens, right? Like, you have sex with someone, and then they either lie to you about how many partners you've been with, or whatever they may have. That's what the whole the metaphor was, like an STD. Like, oh, now she has an STD, but it's, you know, this creature that follows her around and will kill. That's why that film is brilliant. And that is, it is a really good, I love that film. It should have been a second one. It's still following.
Yeah, I think it's great. yeah, still follow. It continues to follow.
Stop following.
please. Continue to follow.
Trauma.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. More trauma. Just keeps on going. So before we kind of wrap up, we did want to talk a bit about Scream 2, the film. And so, Kat, why don't you tell our listeners what Scream 2 is about?
You got it. Scream 2. 2 years after the first series of murders, as Sydney acclimates to college life, someone donning the Ghostface costume begins a new string of killings, directed by Wes Craven. And yeah, I listened to your episode about it, and it was awesome. And I was like, wow, cool. Nice. Same thought. I was, like, worried at first, because I was like, wow, Scream 2 is not nice to Black people. Like, why is this what we're talking about? Yeah, I was like, oh, gosh.
Because Kevin Williams is the king of meta, and I actually think it's very gracious to Black people, because it's very honest about where we stand in horror, and he doesn't shy away from that. And he basically is just like, and this is in 99, and he's just like, you guys, I'm making fun of all of you who are writing Black people this way. I hope you know I'm making fun of you. You're not in on the joke. I'm making fun of you. And the monologue from why can't I remember
Jada Pickett.
Yeah, thank you. Smith. Jada is the opening of our Afro Horror podcast, where she's like, Black people are historically not involved in horror. And she goes through this whole diatribe and everything. Yeah. And that film is important to me because, and I always get in trouble saying this, it's probably the best sequel to ever exist. Sorry, Godfather 2. And again, originally, Scream 2 was going to have Elise Neal be the serial killer, be one of them. And the script leaked. Oh, okay. And because of that, because of the script leaking, they had to change it. So just the potential we could have had, our first Black female, and it would have been amazing. And unfortunately, Elise got repositioned as the Black best friend, just the stock Black best friend. But the potential of that, like, it would have been epic. I still think they should have gone through with it. But at that time, Scream was really big on the surprise, like the third act surprise. So it wasn't going to happen. But yeah, they kill the Black people, you know, they kill Jada in the first 5 minutes of the film. And Omar. But it's just like, it's a commentary on what the genre was, especially at that time. Like, the running joke in movies was Black people die. Like, that's just how it is. Black people are going to die. And first season of Afro Horror, we actually timed Black people's death. Like, and Tyra Banks died at like minute 56 and 24 seconds in Halloween Resurrection. I stopped timing because, like, it was just a thing. It became a lot harder to do. Scream 2 is our most popular episode too, I think, because it really resonates with people, because we do focus so much on the Black people in that film, because there's actually a lot of them to focus on. So not just Elise and Jada and Omar, but the cameraman.
Yeah, it was great.
The actor's name is Safety, but the fact that he's just like, I'm out. He's like, you're dying. People are dying. I'm done. Like, it's just so honest. So I think Kevin did a great job with that script.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the the origin for Scream itself is Wes Craven, you know, being like, I've been making these films and I am very aware of the tropes and the yeah. absurdity and how funny it is. And it is designed to be a parody, you know, and to kind of laugh in those faces by also being like a genuine spooky film. Like it is kind of scary. And I do love the kind of commentary throughout, like having the Randy character in Scream 1 being like, here's what happens. Don't say I'll be right back. Don't do this. Don't have sex. Right? And then those things, of course, happening. And the same thing essentially happens in Scream 2 with the cameraman, Joel, who essentially says, like, good things do not happen to characters that look like me. He's like, they do not. Yeah. And she's
he dismisses himself, which is great. He yeah. removes himself because that's honest, too. It's like, yeah, black people are like, people are dying. And because of you, I'm done. yeah. Hallie, you know, at least Neil's character sticking around Sydney is just like, it's believable because they're friends. But also at the same time, we're like, girl, if you don't leave mm-hmm. her alone.
She like, even says, I'm a therapist. I'm her therapist. She says like that. Yep. Like she's yep. literally like, here's she's my role. Like,
you yes, know? Here's my role.
It's a shame the script got released because that would have been it's a really shame. Really great.
It would have been amazing. It would have been groundbreaking and moving. And I'm disappointed. I'm also disappointed where the Scream franchise has gone since then. It's mm-hmm. that was their blackest film, and it appears that will be the only time. Scream 4, I was just watching it again last night. And I'm just like, oh, there's no black people in this except for one cop. That's it. And we're back. This is where we made full circle. Wes never would have allowed this. So with Scream 5 coming out, I've been also very vocal with them. Again, I would say this to their face. Been very vocal with them on Twitter of like, where's your black people?
Well, it's an important question to ask. And I think more people should be asking it. I think Jada, like the beginning of your show, and so Jada's whole kind of commentary on black people in horror, without that, would have made that film just like every other one, right? Like, yeah, but the fact that she's like, here's the problem with it, and then is dying, like it's such an amazing scene to have her up there in front of them while everyone's so in costume. They're all laughing. They're all like, emulating this villain. Like the fact that she's in line and the people are talking behind her and are like, this is not just a horror movie, people really died. And that's how I feel about like true crime. Like I'm a big mm-hmm. true crime person, but the true crime community is so toxic because there's all this idolation
you have of, like, to realize the killers. Yeah, these people are really dead, like they really got murdered. Yeah. But that scene with Jada in like it's so beautiful, the metaphor too that still lives today. The black women are literally screaming at the top of their lungs that this is something is wrong, something is happening to me, I'm hurt, and no one is listening. Breonna mm-hmm. Taylor, Megan Thee Stallion, like it is so poignant. And how he wrote that scene in the 90s and it's still happening today. It's just like, she's literally bleeding and dying in front of you. We're literally bleeding and dying in front of you and you're ignoring us. I could cry thinking about that. Like that's why it's one of my favorite movies ever. Just because that scene right there is just, it's just everything. It's just everything to me. And whether Kevin intentionally knew he was doing that, I don't think he did because he's not a black woman, but that's exactly what I took from it. And I think a lot of black women feel the same way.
Yeah. I think like her like scream, like right before like the end, like that is really like that hit me. Like I was watching, I was like, this is like literally what that lady was saying in line. Like, no, people are actually dying and you are making like a whole spectacle of it. Like you are making a franchise of it. Like we're seeing that right now, right? Like we're seeing that with Breonna Taylor's name everywhere. Like you are making
and commodifying memes and cons, conventions. And I'm just like, this is a real person who lost their life.
Yeah. They're like commodifying this violence and this pain, and in only the way that they can, because they don't know what it is to experience that. And to hear her in that such, it's such a real scream, and it feels
such a real scream.
Like it's not that classic horror, like Final Girl or Blonde Victim running like, I felt like I was really
like,
watching
listen to me. Like, what's wrong with you people? It's like not only a cry for pain because you've been stabbed a bunch of time, but a cry of just like, I really can't believe I'm gonna die in a theater full of people just yelling at me. Like, it's insane. insane. Like, what is the last moments of my life? And the fact that Wes, you know, holds the shot and she dies with her eyes open on stage is just like, you get so, rest in peace, Mr. Craven, because you're just a genius. And it's such a, that's why I like Scream 2. It's the best out of the franchise. I think out of all the franchise, honestly, I don't know any other horror sequel that has done what Scream 2 did. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm really putting the pressure on Scream 5. It's just like, don't let me down. Your franchise has done so much. Oh, it's social commentary. Don't let me down. Don't circle back just because, you know, you're trying to sell a standard horror film, because Scream isn't standard horror. It's just not. So.
No, yeah. I think it's its own kind of category because it isn't, because it's trying to say more, right?
And it's trying to say more, exactly.
It's super meta too, right? In that, like, yeah. It's saying what it's about, and it's also acting it out in your face. And it kind of like the way that people experience Scream is also a metaphor for like the horror community, because there's people who just kind of see it as a surface value of like, what a funny horror movie, and then other people are like, are you watching this? Like, do you see what they're saying to you?
And see,
right,
that's
now?
The big difference between Scream and Halloween for me, because for Halloween I'm definitely rooting for Michael Myers, like I want him to catch Laurie eventually, like please. But in Scream I'm rooting for Sydney. I never want Sydney to go down. Sydney is, that's it. Like, if she goes, there's no point to have a movie. Like, in the movie now, Sydney. So that's the, you know, for me, that's the difference between those franchises, that you actually see Sydney as a full-fledged person, human being, and you do care for her, and you want her to win, and you don't want to see her perish. But with Halloween, I'm like, Michael, you're too slow. Like, get in the gym, do some cardio, whatever, but TikTok, it's been 20 years, just end her.
Yeah, ridiculous. I totally agree. Wow, this has been a great episode.
I know we didn't talk too much about Scream 2, but they should listen to your episode. It was great.
It's almost like a 2-hour episode of you guys on Scream 2. So please go listen to it. Chris, Courtney, and I really have fun talking with that one. We talk about the D'Angelo song, and that movie's so black. There's a D'Angelo song that opens up the film.
Oh, yeah.
It's brilliant. So you, please go listen to it if you guys want to hear our take on the D'Angelo song as well.
Yes. So yeah, for anyone who enjoyed this commentary and does want to hear more in-depth analysis on Scream 2 and the various other films we mentioned, and even more, you're into season 2 right now. You can just look up Afro Horror Pod. Where else can people find your content?
You can find the Afro Horror column on finaldraft.com. So if you are interested in writing horror and you want to add black people to it, read the column first, because it teaches you what tropes to stay away from so you can actually write accurate black people. You can also find me on Twitter. I am Sharday Sellers. Look, you guys, please don't drag me. I've had a rough weekend with people dragging me on Twitter because I don't know when to stop talking, but I'm a human like everyone else. I have stupid opinions sometimes, and just ignore me. I'm going to stop talking on there soon. But we do have an Instagram, but we never use it. So you can find Afro Horror on Twitter. It's just Afro Horror Pod. Yep. That's it.
Nice.
Check us out.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely. Katja, do you have any last questions?
Not questions. I just think you're great and your show is awesome. And I hope you keep doing what you're doing and write all the things. And I know, like, Gabe and I were always talking about, like, the torchbearers of, like, the horror genre to, like, make it better. It's just cool. Yeah, you're doing cool stuff.
Thank you. I am currently writing my next horror feature that I love, and I hope in a couple of years we can come back on the show and talk about that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely share with us any updates, and we will be retweeting you and supporting you out there because we love watching you do what you do.
Thank you. I thank you, ladies, for having me. Everyone vote November 3rd, and this has been really great.
Awesome. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So don't get married.
They'll eat your kids. All
right. Don't get married.
Yeah.
Don't eat your kids.
It's our sign off. It's a great one. Super positive.
Ooh, okay. I was like, do you know something I don't know? Are you seeing my palm?
Like, not specific.
Don't do it.
Just in general.
Okay.